It's unlikely that the North Koreans will respond in a positive fashion, but I think it's understandable why South Korea did this.
A neighbor not pleased with South Korean overtures. It's Wednesday, July 19th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online right now on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Philippine president seeking martial law extension. Migrants enter Myanmar. The mystery of a missing Chinese scholar. Happy cows and virtual reality learning. Stay with us. We're just getting started with VOA Asia. Japan has criticized South Korea's latest effort to reach out to North Korea in military-to-military talks and arranging reunions for families separated by the Korean War. A government spokesman said in the wake of the July 4th test of an intercontinental ballistic missile, now is not the time for dialogue. It is a time for pressure on Pyongyang. South Korea's offer was the first such overture from the new administration of President Moon Jae-in, who took power May 10th. The two Koreas remain technically at war despite a 1953 armistice. Seoul's proposal also comes as the United States circulates a new UN Security Council resolution imposing new sanctions on North Korea. Korea Economic Institute analyst Troy Stangerone tells VOA's Victor Beatty the matter of family reunions is non-controversial, so the issue comes down to proposed military talks.
While I think everyone agrees that we should continue to process the pressure, at the recent U.S.-Korea summit, President Trump did endorse South Korea trying to take and see if there was a possibility for dialogue, which is something that I think we all realize that if we're going to solve this problem, we're going to have to develop. I think it's unlikely that the North Koreans will respond in a positive fashion, but I think it's understandable why South Korea did this. You know, it'll be interesting to see why Japan specifically seems to be making these comments, but I think South Korea's moves are something that Moon Jae-in has both said and something that President Trump himself seemed to endorse at the summit.
It seems interesting that it comes after the test by North Korea of its first operable ICBM.
I think the challenge here is we haven't seen a new sanction resolution come out yet. We have a situation to where the United States, it looks like, is going to take and potentially go after some additional Chinese entities, banks, and perhaps a few other individuals. So we're seeing the U.S. follow the pressure path. But in terms of timing, you know, I've done some research, and essentially North Korea averages a test every 2 weeks at this point. Clearly, the average doesn't reflect the actual spread of the test. But I think given the way the North Korea's program is going right now, if you're going to try to take and get them to dialogue, you're likely going to be doing that in the shadow of a test. I think that's just the reality at this point, given how frequently they test.
U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley told the Security Council early this month that if it remains united, the international community can cut off major sources of hard currency to North Korea, restrict oil to its military and weapons programs, increase air and maritime restrictions, and hold senior officials accountable. Would this be any different from past resolutions, and is China, with its veto power, a key in this dialogue?
If we could do all those things, we could take and put pressure on the North Koreans. The challenge has been that regardless of the resolutions passed, they either have not been enforced fully. In some cases, some countries don't have the capacity to enforce them. If you look back at, you know, the last two prior resolutions, the Russian government has sought exceptions for some of their activities with North Korea. We have these debates over some countries like Russia trying to carve out certain areas such as the Rason coal exports. You have a situation to where obviously Beijing is concerned about applying too much pressure and potentially causing the regime itself to collapse. The difficulty is that she's right. If we could get everyone on the same page, we could really convince the North Koreans that this is something everyone is serious about and that they need to reconsider their actions. The challenge has been is that there's consistently been differences of perspective and enforcement from different countries.
China's foreign ministry welcomed South Korea's gesture, saying it hopes the two sides will move in a positive direction to break the stalemate and relaunch dialogue and consultation. However, White House spokesman Sean Spicer said any type of conditions that would have to be met by the North are clearly far away from where we are now. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Philippine president asks for extension of martial law in Mindanao. Speaker of Indonesian parliament implicated in corruption scandal. China urges India to withdraw from disputed region, stages drills. Chinese overfishing threatens West African economies. U.S. General says North Korea lacks capacity to hit U.S. with accuracy. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are online at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, please visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte Tuesday asked Congress to extend martial law on the southern island of Mindanao until year's end as the military struggles to contain the growing presence of Islamic State, especially in Marawi City. Mr. Duterte's letter to Congress was read to reporters by presidential spokesman Ernesto Abella.
Upon a thorough personal assessment of the current situation in Marawi City and other parts of Mindanao, and taking into account the reports and recommendations of the Secretary of National Defense as Martial Law Administrator, the Chief of Staff of the Armed Forces of the Philippines, AFP, as Martial Law Implementer, and the Chief of the Philippine National Police, PNP, I have come to the conclusion that the existing rebellion in Mindanao will not be quelled completely by 22nd July 2017.
Mindanao, with a long history of separatist and Marxist-inspired conflict, was placed under military rule May 23rd after militants occupied Marawi City. A senior Philippine military official said Tuesday fighting there continues. Manila said over 400 militants have been killed in the operation at the cost of nearly 100 soldiers and 45 civilians. The martial law extension came one day after Mr. Duterte, a former mayor of a city on Mindanao, sought to advance greater autonomy for Muslims there. Asia Foundation analyst Stephen Rood tells VOA Mr. Duterte is seeking to implement two agreements, one with the Moro Islamic Liberation Front and one with the Moro National Liberation Front.
These two got together to try to come up with a consensus draft this time, and they have presented it to the president for forwarding to Congress. For quite some time, people have been saying, as the threat of ISIS began to grow in the Philippines, that the implementation of these peace agreements would be the best vaccine against the Islamic State virus. So he has always said that he would like to do this. He is now saying it is much more urgent in view of this clash in Marawi City.
Stephen Root also tells us President Duterte has a unique position and command on this issue as a former governor on Mindanao.
There's just his experience there, but as mayor of Davao City down in Mindanao, he was always in contact with these rebel groups, and so he understands them quite well. They trust him and his general sincerity. They don't necessarily trust the Philippine Congress, but the president they trust. At the same time, he's got a supermajority in Congress, which might be of use. On the other hand, this might be so controversial as to override his political capital. It has been tried before, and it failed. There was a previous attempt a couple of years ago under the previous president, Benigno Aquino, but there was a horrific incident where 44 policemen were killed in a botched raid to arrest a terrorist, and that really put closure to it. At that point, Congress was in no mood to provide for more autonomy for Muslim Mindanao.
Root also shares the reaction from rebels on the island and how extended martial law might work out.
Both sides have really welcomed this. It's been a process that's been ongoing because he's been president for a year now. The details would include the fact that there would be separate elections for the autonomous region. They would have greater control over their finances. And interestingly enough, it might slot into the president's more general desire for federalism as an example to what a local state might achieve in other parts of the country.
Stephen Rood said the basis of negotiations remains the territorial integrity of the Philippines, with Manila still in control of foreign and security policy and control of the currency. The goal, he said, is to provide enough autonomy to dampen any desire for independence. Happening now in Asia, Chinese President Xi Jinping pledged Tuesday to make unremitting efforts toward promoting peace in the Middle East following a meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas as China steps up its diplomatic engagement with the region. Palestinian officials have urged China to do more. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for joining us. Thousands of Myanmar and Cambodia migrants who fled past conflicts in their homeland face hardships in Thailand without proper work documents. But their children, born on Thai soil, welcome a new government policy which promises to speed up the citizenship process. Steve Sanford talks to several of the first applicants who are seeking to secure work and travel in Thailand.
For decades, a steady flow of migrants and refugees fleeing conflict and instability in neighboring countries have arrived here in Thailand. Most have crossed the border illegally, making it difficult to obtain proper working papers and forcing many to take on menial jobs with restricted travel. However, a government resolution passed in December enables stateless families to obtain legal citizenship for their children who are born in Thailand. For Corinne Mujay, originally from Myanmar and one of the first to obtain citizenship under the new policy, better education means better paying jobs.
I'm very happy to have the ID card. It makes life easier to travel around and get access to school and have more options. When I went to school in the past, they asked me, "Are you Thai?" Because only Thais can study at school.
The resolution expands eligibility to about 80,000 offspring of migrants and displaced people and localizes the paperwork for expediency. Former border resident and a witness to the ongoing hardships of the refugees, Santapong Moonfong says providing information to the stateless families is key to opening the door for their kids.
The main problem for the stateless people here is they don't know their background. Or even if they have some information, they don't know the process to get status. Some people don't know where they were born. Some of them don't have evidence where they came from. We have to give them knowledge and guide them to get identity cards.
Mae Hong Son province along the Thai-Myanmar border is home to the highest number of stateless people at more than 50,000. Corinne student Sherla Air is a new applicant awaiting confirmation of citizenship so she can pay it forward to others seeking help.
My dream is to get the identity card and continue to study political science. After I graduate, I will come back to work at the local government office and help other children in my community to get the identity card.
As the number of cross-border arrivals in Thailand drops with increased development in Myanmar, many families are hoping for a more secure future for their children on the Thai side. Steve Sanford reporting for VOA from Mae Hong Son, Thailand.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on The Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A Nepali central bank official said Tuesday residents stand to lose millions of dollars held in high-value Indian banknotes that India banned last year. People holding the notes in India were given little less than 2 months to exchange them at banks in a drive against unaccounted wealth in India. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The case of a missing 26-year-old visiting Chinese scholar at the University of Illinois Champaign has created much discussion here in the United States and in China about campus safety. VOA Mandarin reporter Stella Hsu just returned from Illinois to find out more about the case and joins us in the studio today. Let's begin with the missing scholar. Who is she?
Her name is Zhang Yingying. She came here as a visiting scholar at Illinois University at Urbana-Champaign. And then on June 9, 2017, she was waiting for a bus to go to sign a lease for her apartment. And then there was a black car who just drove by, and then the car come back again and approach her. And from what we see on the camera system, it shows that the driver was talking to Zhang Yingying for maybe half a minute, and then Zhang Yingying got on the car. And since then, Zhang Yingying has been missing, and it's now already the 38th day, but nobody has found Yingying.
You went out to Illinois to speak with people there. Right. Who did you speak with?
Right. We went to Illinois. We spoke to a co-worker of Yingying, and also we spoke to the suspect, Brent Christensen's lawyer, two of his lawyers. And we also talked to a Chinese student studying at UIUC, and he told us that he feel that the camera system is not in the U.S. is not working as well as in China. He feel that the school should add more cameras in order to give the students more safety on campus. And we also talked to the detective lieutenant at the UIUC police department, and he told us that this kind of incident never happens before. It's the first time he see this kind of incident in his 17 years tenure.
With this case, a lot of public saw that we do have a pretty robust camera system throughout the campus. We're constantly adding new cameras every week, every month, to try to prevent crimes like this. Now, the camera system is not it's not an active system. Like, in other words, there's nobody watching the system, monitoring, 24 hours a day. However, if we do have crimes like this that occur, we can react and look at the camera system and try to find people or to try to solve crimes after the fact.
I think this also raised another question, is that adding more camera will be a good way to make the campus more safe, but to what extent it will not exploit the residents' privacy? So I think that's an issue that people could think about.
Authorities did get a suspect and have him in custody. Tell us a little bit about this person and perhaps how they caught him.
So after Yingying Zhang went missing, the police officers, they've been trying to find a car that she got on. And then they found Brent Christensen, who was a former student of UIUC. They checked the car and they found that the passenger seat was cleaned. After that, they've been on surveillance on Brent Christensen. They tapped his conversation and they heard that he was talking to someone, and he said that he kidnapped Yingying Zhang and he brought her to his apartment. And then the police officer came and arrested him. And we talked to Christensen's lawyer, Thomas Bruno.
Cases like this are very challenging. It's a very serious case, very serious and grave accusations have been made, and the consequences of them are very severe. We frankly respect and understand the great concern about this case across the entire world, but certainly the nation of China. And we understand that concern. But our job is to make sure that in this case, our client is treated fairly.
This has turned out to be a big story in China, very widely followed. What are some of the comments that you've seen coming from the mainland?
I think this become like a really hotly discussed issue on the social media in China. So some people, they think, how come the FBI have been slow in like investigating? Like, some people on social media, they think that if it's in China, maybe just like 2 days, and like the police will know everything, and that the suspect won't stay silent like Christensen, because he's been now staying silent during all the hearings he attended. So we don't really know much about what he did. So I think this is one thing that was brought up on social media in China. And the other thing is, in China, their camera system is more robust. So they think that, like, how come no one knows where the car went after Zhang Yingying got on the car? So I think this is another issue that is hardly discussed in China.
Stella Xu from our VOA Mandarin service, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Jim.
Developing at this hour in Asia, WhatsApp users in China reported Tuesday the app was partly inaccessible unless virtual private network software was used to circumvent China's online censorship. Widespread service disruptions come amid fears the popular messaging service may be at least partially blocked by authorities. Visit VOA Asia Facebook, always available online. This is VOA Asia.
These cows are happy, not only because they're well fed, but because they enjoy a bovine spa treatment from misting sprays and relaxing.
Now on VOA Asia, researchers in Wisconsin have discovered the secrets to making cows a little bit happier. And they're telling farmers that happier cows are more productive cows, which should make the farmers happier too. Faiza El-Masri has this story as VOA's Faith Lapidus narrates.
These cows are happy, not only because they're well fed, but because they enjoy a bovine spa treatment from misting sprays and relaxing breezes to back massages. They're happier than many other cows, and happy cows produce better milk. That's what the California Milk Advisory Board has been saying for many years. A team of researchers working with the University of Wisconsin's Dairyland Initiative is taking this knowledge to a whole new level. They're visiting farms and showing farmers how to improve their herd's living conditions. Advice that's available to farmers around the world on the initiative's website. One of the important topics is preventing leg pain or lameness.
Lameness impacts everything a cow gets to do in her day. It impacts the way she rests, the way she milks, the way she eats, her ability to reproduce, and ultimately her ability to stay on the farm.
Recommendations also include bigger stalls, more fans, and feeding the cows at the same time. Researchers also suggest keeping cows with their usual group of friends around birthing time to alleviate stress. Mitch Breinick has put the advice into practice to improve conditions for the 400 cows at his Mystic Valley Dairy in south central Wisconsin.
If you take away their stress, they actually produce more milk. And then the other thing that actually is interesting is they do it by eating less feed.
As a result, he says, the dairy's production has increased from about 49 liters of milk a day per cow to almost 57 liters. In addition, his cows have fewer injuries and they live about a year longer. So happy cows make happy farmers, and that's good for everyone. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks to Hollywood special effects, it's possible to create a world of superheroes or galaxies far, far away. VOA's Kevin Enix reports technology is also slowly making its way into the classroom and turning science education into a visual journey that can take students anywhere from inside a cell to the deepest parts of our solar system.
Thanks to a set of VR goggles, Marjay Flowers and Shelby Buchanan can visit a nature preserve.
I thought my favorite one was the one where a girl and a boy were talking about snakes and turtles because, like, that's something new. I don't really see snakes often, and then you got to see the water, and then you got to look around, and you got to see the entire environment, and it looked just so cool, and you just felt so, like, you felt right there on the spot listening to these two people.
This particular setup is called the Victory Virtual Reality System. CEO Steve Grubbs says adding VR to the science curriculum is one way to help students learn. He spoke to VOA by Skype.
American students are failing the standard of science and education. And so we believe that virtual reality is a way to better educate students, to immerse them. And instead of students fighting to be first in line to go to lunch or gym or recess, what we have found is that students want to learn once they have the opportunity to put on the headset and learn in virtual reality.
Grubbs points to studies showing that students who use VR are better able to remember what they learn.
Once kids are immersed and enthusiastic about learning, it follows that they're going to retain more of that information and to understand it better. And so, it makes sense to people and it makes sense to us.
Grubbs also says that VR in some cases provides a safer learning environment. The kids seem to love it.
And then the rooms with the cartoons, I thought those were like really cool. And I thought it was cool that you could go into different rooms instead of staying in one spot watching one thing.
The Victory VR system is already in classrooms in parts of Asia, Canada, and the Caribbean, and will launch in some U.S. schools next month. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Well, no matter where in the world or in Asia that you've been listening to our program, we're glad you joined us today. And a special hello to everybody in Tainan, Taiwan, listening via the voice of Chungrung Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. You can also reach out to us on Facebook at VOA Asia, send us a message or write us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. Special thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Dan Crafton, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a super day.